Your people do have war vessels, I presume. The Republic has no army of its own, Cardass said, choosing his words carefully. Of course, most of our member systems have their own defense forces.
Which can also be used for attack?
That does happen sometimes, Cardass conceded. But the Supreme Chancellor can call on member systems to help stop an aggressor, and that usually ends things pretty quickly. Mediation by the Jedi can sometimes stop trouble before it gets that far.
Jedi?
A class of beings unknown to us, Thrawn told him. Ferassi has been trying to explain them to me. Cardass looked at Maris in surprise. He hadn't realized she'd been having private chats with the commander.
They appear able to access some unknown energy field,
Thrawn continued to his brother. It can be used for sensory enhancement, insight into others' motivations and thoughts, or as a direct weapon. But only for defense, Maris put in. Jedi never attack first.
You talking about Jedi?
Kento put in.
Cardass, did she say Jedi?
She's trying to describe the Jedi for him, Cardass said. The Chiss apparently don't have anything like them.
Good, Kento grunted. At least we topped them in something.
Through the row of viewports on the bridge of the Trade Federation battleship Dark Venge, the starlines faded once again into stars.
We have arrived,
Vice Lord Cav announced from his throne-like command chair. Doriana murmured noncommittally from a seat on the observer's couch, curving out beside the other. In general, the Nymoidians had excellent navigational systems. But systems were only as good as their operators. And in the Dark Venge's case, that was open to question. Sidious had insisted the crews of all the Task Force's ships be kept to a bare minimum, retaining only those who could be trusted to keep their mouths closed and bringing in droids to take up the slack.
Your concerns are needless,
Cav said haughtily, completely missing the direction Doriana's thoughts had taken.
We are double-checking the location now.
Thank you, Doriana said, inclining his head politely. The skeleton crew would not, of course, affect their attack capabilities to any great degree. That would be handled by droid starfighters, and that system was largely automated. He looked around the bridge at the Nymoidians and droids working busily in the various sunken control pits, then turned his attention to the tactical board. The task force was arranging itself into a typical Nymoidian defense structure. The two huge Trade Federation split-ring battleships in the center, where they would be best protected. The six armed Techno-Union hard-cell-class transports, forming a pyramid point defensive shell around them. And the seven Trade Federation escort cruisers, arrayed in a patrol cloud beyond that. It was an awesome collection of firepower, possibly the largest assembled in one place since the fiasco at Naboo. Against even the weaponry of six brand new dreadnoughts, they should have no trouble carrying the day. Assuming, of course, that Cav's navigators had indeed brought them to the right part of the right system. If they missed outbound flight here, they would have to hurry another 600 light-years ahead in order to catch it at its second navigational stop.
And this, Sabaoth said, as he led the way into the unusually low-ceilinged room, is the control room for weapons blister number one. You'll notice the ceiling is low, to make extra room for the turbo-laser charging equipment above us.
Luckily, we don't have any Gungans aboard, Obi-Wan commented, ducking his head a little as he stepped in.
Gungans wouldn't have been allowed anywhere near these stations, even if there were any aboard, Sabaoth said flatly. Weapons specialists need far more sophistication and intelligence than that.
In my experience, those two don't necessarily go together, Obi-Wan commented. And there are four of these blisters on each dreadnought?
Correct,
Sabaoth said, crossing to the main firing console and resting his hand on the headrest of one of the chairs.
Come and sit down, Master Skywalker.
Anakin glanced at Obi-Wan, then walked over and lowered himself gingerly into the seat.
Looks complicated, he commented.
Not really, Sabaoth said, pointing over his shoulder at the various sections of the board. Here are the actual firing controls. Note that you can aim and fire both the forward and aft turbo lasers from here as well as your own starboard side weaponry. Over here is the sensor lock monitor. This is the secondary fire control. This is the weapon status board. This is the comm. This is the tactical display system. All quite straightforward.
Still pretty complicated,
Anakin said.
I'll bet I can design a better layout.
I'm sure you could, Sabaoth said, throwing Obi-Wan an amused smile. Unfortunately, Rendili's star drive didn't think to consult any Jedi during production. Still, you'll learn it quickly enough. We'll start with an overall tutorial and then a simple simulation. You access both over here.
Wait a minute, Obi-Wan said, frowning as he stepped to Anakin's other side. What are you doing?
I'm teaching Master Skywalker how to handle Dreadnought 1's weaponry, of course, Sabaoth said.
Doesn't Captain Pakmilu already have experienced crewers for that job?
Experience is not always the most important aspect of combat, Sabaoth pointed out. Timing and coordination are also key, and no amount of experience can give ordinary gunners the edge that we already possess. Tell me, Master Skywalker, has Master Kenobi ever spoken to you of the Jedi Meld?
I don't think so, Anakin said. What does it do?
It permits a group of Jedi to connect their minds so closely as to act as a single person, Sabaoth told him. It can also be very dangerous, Obi-Wan warned.
It takes a Jedi Master of great power and depth in the Force to create such a state without killing or destroying the minds of everyone involved.
A Jedi Master such as myself, Sabaoth said calmly. I've successfully performed such a meld on 4 separate occasions.
Obi-Wan stared at him.
4?
3 were training exercises, of course, Sabaoth conceded. But the 4th was under serious field conditions, with 5 other Jedi in the meld. As you can see, we came through it successfully.
That was with 6 of you,
Obi-Wan pointed out. There are 19 of us aboard outbound flight. 20, including Master Skywalker. Sabaoth corrected, laying a hand on Anakin's shoulder. Certainly we'll need to proceed with caution. I'll be discussing the procedure with each of my Jedi, and we'll be carrying out a number of practice sessions before we leave Republic space. Still, once we're all comfortable with the technique, we'll become an awesome fighting force indeed. With Jedi working as one at the weapon systems of all 6 dreadnoughts, outbound flight will be virtually unbeatable.
Kardas started awake to find a pair of glowing red eyes hovering above him in the darkness.
Who is it?
He asked anxiously.
Thrawn. The commander's voice came back.
Get dressed.
What's happened?
Kardas asked as he pushed off the blanket and swung his legs over the edge of the bed.
One of my scouts has reported a group of unidentified vessels in the area,
Thrawn said.
Quickly now. We leave in 30 minutes.
45 minutes later, the Springhawk cleared the asteroid tunnel and made the jump to light speed. And not just the Springhawk. Before they made the jump, Kardas counted no fewer than 11 other ships forming up around and behind them, including 2 more Springhawk-sized cruisers.
Is this more Vagari?
He asked as the star lines melted into the hyperspace sky.
It doesn't appear to be, Thrawn said. The ship designs are entirely different. I wanted you aboard to see if you can identify them.
So where exactly are these invaders?
Kardas asked.
Why do you call them invaders?
Well, Kardas floundered. I just assumed they were in Chiss space after that talk you had with your brother.
He frowned.
They are in Chiss space, aren't they?
The charter of the Expansionary Defense Fleet is to observe and explore the region around the Chiss Ascendancy,
Thrawn said.
That's all we intend to do today.
How long until we get there?
Approximately 4 hours, Thrawn said.
In the meantime, I've had a combat suit prepared for you
One with more armoring and self-sealant capabilities than your suit from the Bargain Hunter. Go below and put it on. The armorer will assist you. It took Cardass and the armorer most of the first 3 hours to get the suit fitted correctly, with the 4th hour spent in checking him out on its features. Once that was finished, though, he found the suit quite comfortable to wear, though noticeably heavier than the simple vac suits he was used to. He returned to the bridge to find that in his absence, Thrawn and the rest of the bridge crew had also donned their combat suits.
"Welcome back," the commander greeted him, running an eye over his suit. "We're nearly there."
Cardass nodded and moved to his usual place beside the other's command chair.
"Where are they?"
he asked, peering through the viewports at the stars and a very distant sun.
"There,"
Thrawn said, pointing a few degrees off the starboard bow.
"Sensors, magnify."
The main display rippled and steadied.
Cardass caught his breath, his chest suddenly squeezing tightly against his heart. In the center of the display was a horrible, terrifying, impossible sight. A pair of Trade Federation battleships.
"You recognize them?"
For a moment, Thrawn's question didn't register. Cardass continued to stare at the image, his eyes tracing along the curved split-ring configuration of the ships and up the antenna towers that distinguished Trade Federation battleships from simple freighters. Then his brain seemed to catch, and he tore his eyes away from the sight.
"Yes, I do," he said, marveling at how calm his voice sounded.
"They're battleships from a group called the Trade Federation."
"Members of your republic?"
Cardass hesitated.
"Technically speaking, yes. But these days they seem to be largely ignoring our laws and directives. But you already knew where they were from, didn't you?"
"The hull markings follow a similar pattern to those on the Bargain Hunter," Thrawn said. "I thought there was a reasonable chance they were from your republic."
"But they don't represent the republic itself," Cardass added hastily. "The republic doesn't have any army of its own."
"So you've told me," Thrawn said, his voice suddenly cold.
"You also told me the Republic doesn't condone slavery."
"That's right, we don't," Cardass agreed cautiously.
"Then why did I find evidence of slavery aboard the ship that was pursuing you?"
The rings of tension around Cardass's chest tightened a few more turns. He'd forgotten all about Proga.
"I also told you there were some cultures in our area that do keep slaves," he said, fighting to keep his voice steady. "The Huts are one of them."
"And the Trade Federation?"
"No," Cardass said. "Well, not that I've ever heard, anyway. They're so heavily into droids, they probably wouldn't know what to do with slaves if they had them."
Cardass nodded toward the display, which could be a serious problem for us right now. Each of those battleships carries over 1,000 droid starfighters, not to mention a few thousand battle droids and the landers and carriers to move them around.
"Then this is an invasion force."
Cardass winced. "I don't know. I don't think so. Not with only 2 of them."
"But they could be here to attack us."
"I don't know why they're here," Cardass insisted, sweat gathering around his collar. "Why don't you ask them?"
A faint smile creased Thrawn's face.
"Yes, why don't we?"
He swiveled around.
"Communications. Identify their main command frequency and create a channel. These people speak basic, I presume?"
"Yes," Cardass said. "But they'll also have protocol droids aboard that can translate Sibisti."
"Thank you. But I'd prefer to see their reaction when they're hailed in the language of the Republic," Thrawn said.
Doriana was still fumbling with his tunic belt as he hurried through the open blast doors onto the bridge.
"What's this about an attack?"
he asked, as he crossed the walkways to where Cav stood in front of his command chair.
"Soothe yourself, Master Stratus," Cav said. "It is not as serious as was first thought."
"This is Commander Mithr Ron Nuruodo of the Chiss Expansionary Defense Fleet,"
a voice said from the comm speaker beside the Vice Lord's chair.
"Please identify yourselves and state your intentions."
He has been repeating that message for 10 minutes, Cav said contemptuously. But then, what else can he do?
Explain, Doriana growled. You can start by telling me who he is.
How should I know? Cav said scornfully. But he is a braggart beyond anything I have yet seen.
He seated himself in his chair and touched a control, and a tactical overlay appeared on the main display.
Behold, he said, waving his long fingers. He dares to threaten us with 3 small cruisers and 9 fighters. Most likely they are pirates with a sense of bluff as large as a dog's pride.
This is Commander.
The message repeated. I hear no threat in that message, Vice Lord. Doriana pointed out. All I hear is a local asking what we're doing in his territory.
The threat is implied, Master Stratus,
Cav countered.
It is built into all warships, as much a part of them as weapons and shields.
Doriana looked at the tactical, then at the corresponding telescope display.
Maybe he's got more firepower hanging back in reserve.
No,
Cav assured him.
We have done a complete sensor scan of the entire area. Those 12 ships are all there are.
This is Commander Mithron Nuruodo of the Chisholm.
Shall we consider this an unscheduled drill?
Please identify yourself.
Cav added, as the message continued to play in the background. Let's try talking first, Doriana suggested, sitting down on the couch beside the other. The fact that this Mithron Nuruodo spoke basic might very well mean he was a pirate with some familiarity with some of the outer reaches of the Republic.
Open a hailing channel. Open!
Doriana reached over to Cav Station and keyed the control.
I greet you, Commander Mithron Nuruodo. This is Stratus, commanding Special Task Force 1.
My greetings in return, Commander Stratus.
Mithron Nuruodo's voice came back.
Please explain to me the purpose of your task force.
We intend no harm to you or your people, Doriana said. But I'm afraid the details of our mission must remain confidential.
I'm afraid in turn that your reassurances are insufficient,
Mithron Nuruodo said. Beside Doriana, Cav muttered something.
I'm sorry, Commander, Doriana said, throwing a warning look at the Nymoidian. Unfortunately, I'm under orders.
Why do you waste time this way?
Cav demanded. Cursing under his breath, Doriana lunged for the mute control. With all due respect, Vice Lord, what do you think you're doing?
What do you think you are doing?
Cav countered.
They are no more than a parasite fly fluttering against a window. Let us destroy them and be done with it.
If you don't mind, I'd first like to find out who they are and where they come from, Doriana said.
We can learn that from their charred remains,
Cav said, drawing himself up to his full height.
The time for talk is over.
With a decisive jab of his finger, he cut off the comm channel.
Order the Keeper to launch half its droid starfighters,
he called across the bridge, gesturing toward the 2nd Trade Federation battleship.
3 groups will attack the intruders, the rest forming a defense screen around the task force. An order transfer of command. I will control all the starfighters from here.
Yes, Vice Lord,
one of the Nymoidians said.
Do we launch our starfighters as well?
We will hold them in reserve.
Cav looked at Doriana.
In case they have reinforcements on the way,
he added, almost grudgingly. Here they come, Cardass said, pointing at the display. Droid starfighters. You see them?
Yes, of course, Thrawn said calmly.
All vessels pull back. Cardass, you said droids can think and act on their own. Do these droid starfighters also have that capability?
I don't think so, Cardass said, trying to unfreeze his mind and think as the Springhawk began moving backward.
No, I'm sure they don't. They're remotely controlled in groups from one of the battleships.
Come, Thrawn called. Have you located and identified their control frequencies?
Yes, Commander,
the comm officer reported.
The control appears to be secured with a rolling encryption system. I estimate maximum range to be 10,000 visvia.
Pull us back to 11,000, Thrawn ordered, turning back to Cardass. 10,000 Visvia is approximately 16,000 of your kilometers. Does that sound like the correct operating range?
Cardass spread his hands helplessly. I'm sorry, but I don't know.
No apologies needed, Thrawn assured him. At any rate, we'll know soon enough.
Enemy fighters still approaching, one of the crewers warned. Main group is holding back.
Interesting, Thrawn said thoughtfully. The main body appears to be forming a defensive screen around the larger vessels. Considering his numerical advantage, this Commander Stratus seems unusually cautious.
Attackers pulling back, the sensor officer called. Reforming into an outer screen between us and the fleet.
Apparently we were correct about the 10,000 Visvia range, Thrawn concluded. Excellent.
So what do we do now? Cardass asked.
For a moment, Thrawn sat silently. His eyes narrowed as he gazed at the displays.
We try an experiment, he said at last.
Incoming!
One of the Nymordians in the control pits called sharply.
Single fighter, Vector 042 by 088!
The fool, Cav said with a snort.
Does he think us inattentive? Outer group, intercept and destroy!
Doriana watched the displays as the three groups of droid starfighters reformed from their outer picket screen and swung to intercept the lone alien fighter. But they had barely settled into their attack vector when the intruder broke off, swinging around in a tight curve and hurrying back to the safety of distance.
Return them to patrol, Cav ordered. Does this Mithraudo not realize how badly he is outmatched?
Maybe all he wants is to sit back there out of range and watch us, Doriana pointed out.
I don't need to remind you that we can't afford to have witnesses around when outbound flight gets here.
Do you suggest they are Senate spies?
Or they might be from the Jedi, or from Palpatine, or from someone else, Doriana said.
All I know is that no one this far from the Republic should be speaking basic.
He comes at us again, Vice Lord,
the Nymoidian at the sensors called.
Same fighter, same vector.
Same response, then,
Cav called back.
Perhaps he is trying to judge exactly how far our control extends.
Be careful, Doriana warned. If they figure out how to jam the signal, those starfighters will go dormant.
And we'll self-destruct a few minutes later,
Cav said impatiently.
Thank you, Master Stratus. I am familiar with my own weaponry. See, again he pulls back, no wiser than he was before.
Unless he's a decoy, Doriana said, searching the other displays. He's up to something, Vice Lord.
Whatever it is, it will gain him nothing,
Cav said.
On the display, the retreating fighter suddenly flipped over and again charged in.
Vice Lord,
a Nymoidian began.
Same response,
Cav cut in.
I see now his plan, Master Stratus. He hopes to drain the starfighters of their fuel and then drive in unopposed. What he does not realize is that I still have all the Dark Venger starfighters in reserve, plus half of the Seekers.
Maybe, Doriana murmured, his vague sense of uneasiness deepening as he watched the same scenario play itself out for a third time.
Once again, the starfighters chased the intruder away. Once again, the alien ship flew out of range and flipped over for another run. The show repeated twice more, and Doriana was just checking the chrono to see how close the starfighters were to their 25-minute fuel time limit when Cav abruptly slammed his fist on the arm of his chair.
I weary of this game, he said. You, order the Keeper to advance and to launch the rest of its starfighters into shield configuration. Hold it,
Doriana cut in.
Suddenly, the scenario had changed. The fighter was again retreating with starfighters in pursuit, but this time, the rest of the alien force had leapt forward, driving hard toward the gap that had opened up between them and the main task force.
And so they make their final mistake,
Cav said with satisfaction.
Signal the starfighters to attack.
The Nymoidian acknowledged and tapped at his board. But to Doriana's disbelief, the droids didn't respond. Instead, they continued in pursuit of the retreating fighter.
Order them to attack!
Cav snapped again.
What are you doing? Call them to the attack! They do not respond!
The other Nymoidian called back.
I don't believe it.
Cardass murmured as he watched the droid starfighters ignore the incoming Chiss ships completely as they headed mindlessly toward deep space.
How did you get them to do that?
The command signal uses a rolling encryption, Thrawn explained, as the Springhawk shot forward past the now vanished outer defense screen. But with so many fighters requiring signals, I knew the rotation would have to be a limited one. It turns out that there are only 3 separate encryption patterns for this group. I simply recorded the version the droids would be expecting next, then broadcast it to them with enough power to override whatever their masters in the battleship were trying to send.
But how could you figure out... Oh.
Cardass interrupted himself as it finally clicked. With your fighter always going in on the same vector, and the droid's command always the same come out of this formation and attack the enemy on this vector code, the only part that ever changed was the encryption pattern itself,
which allowed us to isolate the command we wanted and duplicate it,
Thrawn confirmed. He tapped a key on his board.
All vessels, attack pattern Dimoporai.
Here they come,
Doriana muttered, his fingers digging tensely into the couch cushion beside him. The incoming aliens were widening their formation now, sacrificing the protection of overlapping shields to gain extra maneuvering room. Swarms of starfighters from the nearer parts of the defense screen were breaking their own formation in response, sweeping in over a wide, three-dimensional wavefront toward the intruders. The two groups were nearly within laser range of each other. And then, each of the alien fighters launched a single missile. There was a subtle flicker in the indicator lights at the Dark Venge's computer command board, as the starfighter's sensor information was collected, compiled, and analyzed, and the proper response formulated. The response was translated into 100 updated commands, which were then sorted, encrypted, and transmitted back to the primitive droid brains riding in their armored casings. A sliver of a second later, the starfighters responded to those commands with a rain of concentrated laser fire that blew all 9 missiles into shrapnel.
A foolish waste of effort,
Cav commented.
The range was clearly too great for...
Hold it,
Doriana said, frowning at the displays. There was something still moving along the shattered missiles' lines of flight. Filmy spots of nearly invisible haze that seemed to be growing larger as they sped toward the incoming starfighters.
Call them back,
he told Cav urgently. But it was too late. Even as the alien attack formation abruptly came apart, with all 11 ships shooting off in all different directions, the hazy spots intersected their target starfighter groups. There were multiple flashes of subdued light.
They do not respond!
One of the Nymoidians called from the computer board.
9 groups of droids have gone silent!
Connor nets!
Doriana snarled.
This is impossible!
Cav said, his 5-cornered hat bobbing as he swung his head back and forth around the bridge.
How can he do this?
Get the rest of the starfighters into space! Doriana ground out. Now!
Cav didn't need any prompting.
Order Keeper to activate all remaining droid starfighters. They will launch when ready, and move all those already launched to intercept.
Wait a minute,
Doriana objected.
You can't leave our other flanks unguarded. Against what?
Cav retorted.
This is the battlefront. If we do not defend it, there will be no other flanks left to guard.
He gestured across the bridge.
Obey my order!
Here they come,
Cardass murmured, wondering if Thrawn had finally sliced off more than he could serve. The Chiss had dispatched those first few groups of droid starfighters with relative ease, But tricks like that only worked once against a given opponent. And now, all the rest of those hundreds of starfighters were sweeping around the flanks of the Trade Federation fleet, heading straight toward them. Unless that was exactly what Thrawn had been waiting for. Kardash shifted his eyes across the displays, looking for the cruiser that had slipped away from them just before the fighting started. If the main Chiss force was merely a diversion... But the Whirlwind wasn't charging in from the side for a sucker punch attack. It was still sitting quietly in space, apparently being held in reserve. He looked back at the incoming starfighters. "I hope you've got one great father of a shock net up your sleeve," he warned. "We'll certainly have to consider creating such a device if we begin facing opponents like this on a regular basis," Thrawn said dryly. "Tell me, what happens to these droids if the communication signals are cut off?"
"If the... Are you talking about jamming?"
"You disapprove?"
"No, of course not," Kardas said.
"But Trade Federation command signals are supposed to be unjammable. They can change frequencies and command patterns instantly. The minute you block off one part of the spectrum, they just shift to another."
"And if you block the entire spectrum at once?"
Kardas stared at him. The man was serious.
"You can't blanket the whole area, Commander. It's too big. The minute you start, they'll know what you're doing and send a set of contingency orders to everything outside your jamming. Those droid starfighters may not be smart, but they're certainly capable of downloading enough general commands to keep them functioning until they've pounded us to dust."
"Only if there are any starfighters still outside the jamming," Thrawn pointed out. "But it seems our opponent has taken care of that problem for us."
He pointed. "Even as we close the distance, he is converging all his starfighters into this one small area."
Kardas stared at the displays. "What about your own communications? If you jam the whole spectrum, you'll be out of touch with your people too."
"Fortunately, my warriors are capable of more than simply downloading general commands," Thrawn said. "Let's see which side's battle philosophy proves the more versatile."
Leaning forward, he took a deep breath.
"Full spectrum jamming. Now."
For a long, horrifying second, the Dark Vengeance Bridge was filled with a screech like something from the restless undead of ancient Coruscant legend. Then the Nymoidian at the comm slapped at the switch, cutting off the wail and leaving only a distant ringing in Doriana's ears.
"What in the name of... Vice Lord! We are being jammed!"
the Nymoidian called.
"All starfighters have gone dormant!"
Doriana stared out the viewports, his stomach tightening into a hard knot. The starfighters had indeed locked down, each of them now flying mindlessly in whatever direction it had last been pointed, and swerving with ease through the drifting obstacle course, blasting away at the helpless starfighters as they went. Mithron Yoruido's alien ships were headed straight for them, the fighters in screening formation ahead of the two cruisers.
"Get our starfighters back online!"
Cav ordered tautly, jabbing a hand toward the Nymoidians at the command board.
"Get them back! We are trying!"
one of them called.
"We have opened laser communications to as many as we can!"
But those comm lasers were line of sight, Doriana knew. And with a sinking feeling, he realized that this limitation was growing ever tighter as expanding clouds of dust and debris from the shattered starfighters began to block even this last gasp communication method. A few of the starfighters were coming back to life, but they were targeted and destroyed by the aliens before they could organize into an effective fighting force.
"What about the other ships?"
he demanded.
"Why aren't they attacking?"
"There!"
someone called, and Doriana saw an arm point upward from one of the pits.
"The hard cells have launched their missiles!"
"About time," Doriana muttered, feeling a cautious hope rising within him as five clusters of three missiles each shot toward the attackers. The attackers reacted instantly, five of the fighters abandoning their thrust toward the battleships and curving toward the outside of the Trade Federation formation. The missiles, locking in on the movement, followed.
"Good,"
Cav said with satisfaction.
"The next salvo will draw the rest of the fighters away and leave the cruisers undefended. Then our own quad laser batteries can destroy them with ease.
Maybe, Doriana said cautiously, following the fleeing alien craft with his eyes. They were cutting in and out through the masses of drifting starfighters, clearly trying to throw off the pursuing missiles' homing locks. But to no avail. Techno-Union hardware was among the best in the Republic, and the missiles maneuvered their own way through the clutter with ease as they continued to close the gap. The aliens reached the edge of the starfighter cloud and curved tightly back into it again, driving inward toward the main ships. Again, the missiles matched the maneuver. The fighters straightened out. And then, in near unison, each dropped a small object aft toward its pursuers. And Doriana stiffened as a well-remembered hazy cloud erupted from each of them, unfolding directly in the path of the incoming missile clusters.
More Connor nets, he snapped.
But there was nothing the onlookers could do. The nets enveloped the missile clusters and flashed their killing jolts of high-voltage current, destroying homing electronics and drive systems alike, and leaving the missiles as dead as the drifting starfighters around them. Only, once again, Mithron Yoruodo hadn't been content to merely protect his own ships from attack. Even as Doriana's hands curled into helpless fists, their inertia sent the missiles slamming into the Techno-Union ships. There were multiple blasts as sections of hull metal shattered outward into space. And then, like a minor sun going off at close range, one of the ships exploded completely.
What?
Cav gasped.
No! Not from a single missile cluster! This is impossible!
Everything Mithron Yoruodo does is impossible, Doriana retorted bitterly. The missiles must have hit a weak spot.
What kind? Where could it be?
Doriana snorted. Just watch his ships. They'll be targeting the same spot on all the rest of them. He was right. Within minutes, the alien fighters and cruisers had successfully dodged the desperate flurry of missiles the Techno-Union ships were now throwing at them, and had efficiently destroyed every one of them. The spot, Doriana noted with morbid fascination, was the line junction to the massive external fuel cells.
We must escape,
Cav said, his voice shaking.
Helm, prepare to jump to light speed.
Wait a minute, Doriana protested, grabbing at his arm. You can't just abandon the fleet.
What fleet?
Cav snarled.
Look around you, Master Stratus. What fleet?
Doriana felt his throat tighten. He was right, of course. All six of the Techno-Union hard cells were gone, half of them destroyed by their own missiles. The seven escort cruisers, never intended to operate against such enemies without capital ship support, were being systematically hunted down and eliminated. Only the two Trade Federation battleships were still in any condition to fight or run. But with their communications still blocked, there was no way to order a general retreat. If the Dark Venge left, it would be leaving alone.
Jump calculated,
the helmsman called.
Make the jump,
Cav ordered, glaring at Doriana as if daring him to argue.
Do you hear me? Now!
The hyperdrive does not respond,
the helmsman said, his voice bubbling with sudden panic.
It claims we are too close to a planetary mass.
Doriana twisted around to look at the row of status boards. That was what the reading said, all right.
Malfunction?
No malfunction, Cav murmured, his voice dull and fatalistic.
Merely more Chiss wizardry.
A fresh flicker of light caught Doriana's eye, and he looked back out the viewports. Across the field of carnage, droid starfighters were starting to explode as too many minutes without communication passed, and they began to activate their self-destruct mechanisms. Through the scattered bursts of fire, Doriana saw the Keeper suddenly lurch as the upper surface of its starboard ring half erupted in 100 small explosions.
Vice Lord!
Someone called.
I know, Cav said with a tired sigh. The starfighters I ordered prepped are exploding.
Doriana nodded, his own bitterness long since faded into a deep sense of the inevitable.
Then it is over,
Cav said quietly. Lifting his hands, he carefully removed his five-cornered hat and set it with equal care on the floor in front of him.
We are all dead.
It would seem so, Doriana agreed mechanically, feeling his forehead creasing as a strange fact suddenly struck him. With all the death and debris and charred hulks of ships floating all around them, the Dark Venge itself had yet to be so much as scratched. He took another longer look at the status boards. Except for the inexplicably dormant hyperdrive, everything else seemed perfectly functional.
Or maybe not, he added.
I think Mithron Yoruodo has something else in mind for us. Cav snorted derisively.
And what precisely gave you that impression?
Puzzled, Doriana turned back, to find that one of the alien cruisers had suddenly appeared outside the viewports. It was hovering bare meters away from the transparasteel, its missile racks pointing into the bridge in silent warning and clear command.
Close down the midline quad laser batteries, Vice Lord, Doriana said quietly. Then seal the main hangar exits and shut down all the droid starfighters.
He took a careful breath.
And then, prepare for company.
The final turbo lift door slid open, and 20 meters down the corridor, Cardass saw at last the open blast doors of the battleship's bridge. 20 meters of corridor lined on both sides with armed, tense-looking battle droids. Thrawn didn't even hesitate. He strode forward calmly, his two warriors equally sedate as they walked at his sides. Swallowing hard, Cardass forced himself to follow. There were dozens of droids on duty on the bridge, most of them service and monitor units, seated or plugged into the various stations in the control pits. Standing in the center of the quiet activity were just two actual beings, waiting together beside the vacant helm chair. A tall Nymoidian in elaborate robes, and a more sedately dressed human male. Again, Thrawn didn't pause, but headed down the walkway toward them. He stopped 3 meters away, and for a moment seemed to size them up. Then, deliberately, he swiveled to face the human.
Commander Stratis, he said. I am Commander Mithron Yoruodo.
Stratis does not command this vessel,
the Nymoidian said stiffly before Stratis could answer.
I am Vice Lord Cav of the Trade Federation, and you, Commander Mithrado, have committed an act of war.
Vice Lord, please, Stratis said. Recriminations will serve no useful purpose.
Do not think you have gained anything for your audacity,
Cav continued, ignoring him.
Even now, I could destroy you where you stand.
He gestured, and from behind them came a sudden metallic racket. Cardass spun around, his heart freezing as a pair of droidica destroyer droids rolled into view and came to a halt just inside the bridge blast doors. They unfolded into their tripod stance, and a second later, Cardass found himself staring down the barrels of four pairs of high-energy blasters.
Vice Lord, you fool! Stratis bit out urgently. What do you think?
Calm yourself, Commander. Thrawn soothed him. We're in no danger.
Carefully, hardly daring to breathe, Cardass turned his head. Stratus's eyes had gone wide, his throat muscles tight as he gripped the Nymoidian's arm. But Thrawn merely stood quietly, his face expressionless as he studied the droidicus.
Interesting design. That shimmering sphere, a small force field.
Yes, Stratus said cautiously. I assure you, Commander.
Thank you for the demonstration, Vice Lord,
Thrawn interrupted.
But now you will send them away.
For a long, terrible moment, Cardass thought the Nymoidian was going to defy Thrawn's order, the way he'd ignored Stratus's rebuke. The Chiss and Nymoidian locked eyes, and for half a dozen heartbeats, the bridge was silent. And then Cav's entire body seemed to wilt, his eyes dropping away from Thrawn's stare as he half lifted a hand toward the droidicas.
Looking back over his shoulder, Cardass watched in relief as the destroyers folded up again and rolled their way off the bridge.
Thank you, Thrawn said. Now, as I asked you before, please state your intentions and those of your task force.
A task force that no longer exists,
Cav put in.
That loss was your doing, Thrawn countered. All I wished was a civilized answer. He turned to Cardass. Is that correct? Civilized?
Or just civil, Cardass told him. Or polite.
Civil,
Thrawn said, as if testing the word against some unknown set of guidelines.
Yes, all I wished, Commander, was a civil answer.
Yes, I know, Stratus said, his eyes on Cardass. May I ask your companion's name and origin? I'm just a visitor, Cardass said quickly. That's all.
Not quite, Thrawn corrected. Master Cardass was simply a visitor. Now he's my translator.
His expression hardened.
And my prisoner.
Cardass felt his mouth drop open.
I'm what? You arrived uninvited in Chiss space. Now, less than 3 months later, an invasion fleet from your people has appeared. Coincidence?
I had nothing to do with this. Cardass protested. And we're not an invasion fleet, Stratus added.
Make me believe that,
Thrawn said, his voice darkening even further.
Both of you.
Cardass looked at Stratus. Commander, he entreated. Stratus's eyes flicked to him, then back to Thrawn, a thoughtful expression suddenly appearing on his face.
Very well, he said, gesturing toward the side of the bridge.
There's an office back there where we'll have more privacy. Thrawn inclined his head slightly. Lead the way.
Doriana led them to Cav's command office, his skin prickling with anticipation and the stirrings of fresh hope. An hour ago, it had been all over, the mission a failure. Doriana himself among the walking dead. Even if their attackers allowed them to return to the Republic, he knew the payment Darth Sidious would demand for his failure. But now, suddenly, all that had changed. Maybe.
Please make yourselves comfortable, Doriana invited, gesturing his guests to seats facing the desk as he circled around the massive carved wood structure and sat down in Cav's equally elaborate chair.
May I offer you some refreshment?
No, thank you.
Mithron Yeruodo said as he and Cardass sat down.
All right, Doriana said, focusing his full intellect on the task at hand.
This was it. Let me tell you about a project called Outbound Flight. He started at the beginning, describing the project's origin and its mission, and making sure to emphasize the Dreadnought's size and weaponry.
Interesting,
Mithron Yeruodo said when he'd finished.
What does this have to do with us? The fact that outbound flight is a danger to both the Republic and your own people,
Doriana told him. You remember my mentioning a group aboard called the Jedi. These are beings of great power, but who are also dangerous troublemakers.
In what way?
They have very rigid ideas of how people should act and what they should think and do,
Doriana said.
They feel they have all the answers, and that everyone else should submit to their concept of justice.
Yet you say they are traveling to another galaxy,
Mithron Yeruodo reminded him.
Again, how then does this affect the Chiss?
Because before they leave, they intend to explore some of the unknown parts of our own galaxy,
Doriana said.
If they arrive in Chiss space, they'll certainly attempt to impose their will upon your people.
Attempt is the correct word, Mithron Yeruodo said, his face hardening. The Chiss do not simply accept alien concepts without careful consideration. We certainly do not submit to domination.
By anyone.
Of course not, Doriana said. But I warn you not to underestimate them. The Jedi are ruthless and subtle.
and I dare say their power is beyond anything you've ever encountered.
You may be surprised at what we've encountered, Mithron Yoruido said, his voice grim.
Abruptly he stood up. But we will discuss such matters later. Right now, there is other business that requires my attention.
Of course, Doriana said, rising to his feet as well. What do you wish us to do in your absence?
For the present, you will both remain on this bridge, Mithron Yoruido said. I will send for you when I wish to see you again. In the meantime, I will send aboard a team to examine your vessel and its equipment.
Never!
Cav snapped.
This ship is the property of the Trade Federation!
Quiet! Doriana cut him off, glaring at him.
We will, of course, render any and all assistance they may require.
Thank you, Mithron Yoruido said. They will have new orders for you when they are finished. You will obey those orders.
Doriana nodded.
As you wish. Mithron Yoruido looked at Cav, and Doriana could sense the tension between them. But the Nymordian remained silent, and after a moment, Mithron Yoruido turned to Cardass.
Come.
They left the room. Doriana watched until they had disappeared through the bridge blast doors, then turned to Cav.
With all due respect, Vice Lord, what in the name of your grub mother do you think you're doing?
That is my question for you, Master Doriana,
Cav countered.
Do you simply turn your back downward and give over our lives and property to this primitive backworld alien?
Look around you, Vice Lord, Doriana said grimly. This primitive alien just wrecked our entire task force. And unless I missed it, he didn't lose a single ship of his own in the process.
And you wish to make him even stronger by offering him access to Trade Federation secrets?
Doriana took a deep breath.
Listen to me,
he said, enunciating his words carefully. We've failed our mission. Even if Mithron Yoruido turned tail right now and left us in peace, there's no way in the universe our single battleship could take on Outbound Flight's 6 dreadnoughts. We would have no choice but to return to the Republic and face Darth Sidious's anger. And I can assure you that you would wish you had died today, torn apart in agony by the Chiss fighters.
He lifted a finger.
Unless...
He let the word hang in the air.
Unless?
Cav asked, his voice subdued.
Unless, Doriana said, we can persuade Mithron Yoruido to destroy Outbound Flight for us.
Cardass had been sitting alone at the computer desk in his Springhawk quarters for 3 hours, struggling through pages and pages of technical Chiyun text and scans, when Thrawn finally arrived.
My apologies for my long absence, the commander said as the door slid shut behind him. I trust you've kept yourself occupied.
I've been studying the tech team's reports as he requested, Cardass said stiffly, turning back to the computer.
And
what?
Your assessment of the Trade Federation's capabilities,
Thrawn asked patiently. Cardass sighed, feeling like a ship with a misfiring gyro. Those droid starfighters are top-line weapons. I read a report a few months ago speculating that the only reason they didn't completely wipe out their attackers at Naboo was that having to control all those ground troops at the same time overloaded the computer systems and made the starfighter control more sluggish than it should have been. Here, they weren't running any ground troops. In my humble civilian's opinion, if you hadn't knocked out their communications the way you did, they'd have cut us to ribbons.
Agreed,
Thrawn said.
What about Vice Lord Cav and Commander Stratus, personally?
Why are you even asking me this? Cardass demanded. I thought you didn't trust me.
Thrawn shook his head. Not at all. If you and your companions were spies, you'd have used your access to the base's computer to study our technology and learn the locations of our worlds. Instead, you've merely worked on improving your language skills. May I sit down?
Yes, of course, Cardass said, scrambling out of his chair and extending a hand. Preoccupied with his own uncertainty and bruised pride, he hadn't even noticed the utter weariness in Thrawn's face and posture. "Are you all right?"
"I'm fine," Thrawn assured him, waving off the proffered hand as he stepped over to the bunk and sat down onto it. "I just received word that Admiral Ar-Alani is on her way back."
Cardass frowned. "They're finished studying the Vagari ship already?"
"I believe she's cut short her role in the examination," Thrawn said. "That was why I made a point of accusing you of espionage in front of my warriors. After today's events, she will undoubtedly be questioning them, and I wish to have a plausible reason on record as to why you and the others were still in Chiss space. My apologies for any distress that may have caused you."
"Don't worry about it," Cardass said, frowning. "You think Ar-Alani is suspicious of you?"
"I have no doubt," Thrawn said, "particularly given the reports she's been receiving from Krustai."
"But who at your base would have..." Cardass broke off as a horrible thought struck him.
"Thrass? Your brother? Who else would have felt it necessary to keep her informed?"
"Are you saying your own brother is trying to sink you?" Cardass demanded, still not believing it.
"My brother cares deeply about his blood family, including me," Thrawn said, his voice tinged with sadness. "But he's disturbed by what he sees as my self-destructive behavior. And as a syndic of the Eighth ruling family, his duty is to protect that family's honor and position."
"So he calls an admiral down on you?"
"If Admiral Ar-Alani is here to reverse my orders, I'll be unable to do anything that will lead to further trouble," Thrawn pointed out. "Or so he reasons. With a single course of action, he thus protects both me and the Eighth family."
Cardass thought about the Vagari attack they'd witnessed, and the people pinned helplessly under fire in their hull bubbles. And meanwhile, people at the Vagari would be free to go their way.
"Indeed."
Thrawn pressed the palm of his hand against his forehead.
"Still, until the Admiral arrives, command remains mine."
"What's your impression of Vice Lord Cav and Commander Stratus?" With an effort, Cardass dragged his mind away from the images of the Vagari's living shields. "For starters, I don't think Stratus is really in command. I just can't see the Nymoidians handing their own ships over to a human that way."
"Unless the human is somehow higher in authority than they are," Thrawn pointed out. "Or if the human is an agent for such a person. Stratus itself is, of course, an assumed name."
"Could be," Cardass agreed. "I do think that they're telling the truth about not being an invasion force, though. Even if their storage rings are packed to the shock webbing with battle droids, they can't possibly have enough for a planetary occupation."
"Then you conclude their mission is indeed to ambush this outbound flight?"
"I might, if I knew what outbound flight was," Cardass said. "But I've never heard of it. And I don't necessarily trust Stratus's opinions."
Thrawn nodded. "Perhaps Kento or Farasi will have more information."
"Maybe," Cardass said. "We're heading back to Krustai, then?"
"I need to be there to welcome Admiral Ar-Alani," Thrawn reminded him. "My people here can finish the examination without us."
"What if Cav and Stratus decide to kill all of them and make a run for it?"
"They won't," Thrawn assured him. "First of all, they can't simply jump to hyperspace, no matter how much the Vice Lord might like to, not with the whirlwind pinning them in place. But even if they could escape, I don't think they would. Stratus very much wants me to destroy outbound flight for him."
Cardass felt his eyes widen. "Is that where this is going?
What did you think all that talk of weaponry and dangerous Jedi was all about?"
Thrawn countered. I thought he was trying to get you to let them go," Cardass said, stumbling over his own tongue.
"You aren't thinking." "I will do whatever necessary to protect those who depend on me,"
Thrawn said, his voice carefully precise.
"No more, but no less."
He stood up.
"But that isn't your concern," he said. "Once again, I thank you for your assistance."
"No problem," Cardass said, standing up as well.
One last question, if I may. How are you so sure that those droidicas wouldn't gun us down?
Those... Oh, the rolling droid fighters, Thrawn said. It wasn't difficult. Everything about